This is Shirley Bradley. I'm at the home of Russell Alberts. We're going to be talking about real memories, and this is April 16th, 1992, and we're in Farwell, Michigan. Okay. When did you start working for Rio?
June 18th, 1928.
And how did you happen to go to Rio?
Well, I went around with a kid that I went to school with, and his dad was a superintendent over in the motor plant. And he got us a job there.
What did you do when you first started?
I worked, I hired in as a trucker, 40 cents an hour.
Is that right? What were you doing on the truck?
Just pushing stock around.
Pushing stock around?
Yeah. Well, I worked that until January of that year, or the next year, and then I went on production. I was spraying paint.
On trucks?
Yeah.
Well, then, how did you do that? What did you use?
Spray gun. Spray gun and a 5-gallon pail.
Did anybody show you how to do that, or they just said, here's your gun, go to it, or?
Well, you learn by error, I guess you might say. But I was spraying oils for the trucks.
Hmm.
And our paint was, we had to go get our own paint, we had to do our own mixing.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, and we sprayed out of a 5-gallon pail hauled up on a block and tackle.
It was overhead and it fed down through something?
Yeah, we had to haul it up to the girders and then tie the rope down below. A gravity feed, they call it.
Uh-huh.
And then after that, they came in with the pressure tanks, long after that.
Did that make it easier?
Oh yeah, it made it easier, but we still had to mix our own paint.
You did. Did you have a certain proportion? What'd you mix the paint with?
Well, we were spraying oil finish. We had to mix it with Japan dryer.
What was that, like a lacquer?
Turpentine.
Turpentine. That made the paint dry faster?
Supposed to, yeah. The Jap dryer is what made it dry faster.
What? Oh, really? What was that? Was that a...
Well, I don't know what it was, what the mixture was.
Like it was
no
a
idea.
Chemical.
All I know was we called it a Jap dryer.
I see.
But it set it up faster.
And these were just for the wheels?
Yeah, I don't know. All the same thing process went on the bodies. They sprayed those upstairs, but it was the same deal, same mixture.
What do you remember about the people that you worked with? Were they friendly? Did they show you how to do the job?
Oh, my gosh, my sake. I worked with a 3-man crew. One guy was named Lloyd Miller. He was finishing, I was priming. And then when we came downstairs in the new plant, I worked with someone named Abel McCord. And Hugo Hines, and another fellow that I don't remember his name anymore, but they were a 3-man crew.
Mm.
But I quit spraying paint in 1935 on account of the health hazard.
It was beginning to bother you?
Oh yeah, I got where I couldn't eat anything.
Is that right? What kind of precautions or safety devices did you have? Did you wear a mask or? No?
We were spraying in section booths with motor-driven fan. We had to clean our own booths on Friday night.
Clean all the paint up?
We had to pull all the, they were lined with paper. We had to pull all the paper out and put new paper in it. Then we had to take a club and beat on the stacks outside and knock all the overspray down, clean that out.
Like big filtering stacks that supposedly took the paint fumes out?
Big stacks went up on the outside of the building. And all that paint fumes went up the stacks.
Oh.
But, it would catch on the side and pile up, and then we had to knock it loose.
Huh.
But anyway.
You did that once a week?
Yeah, on Friday night.
Hmm. What kind of hours were you working? Were you working?
10 hours a day, 5 days and a half a week.
And what year was that when you started doing it?
1928, when I went to spraying paint in 1929.
So production must have been pretty good if you were working.
Oh, yeah, it was, but I don't know what sales was, but production was pretty good.
Must have been.
And I worked in the spray booth until 1935, And I had to get out of there, and I went down to the frame assembly room working on an air hammer.
What were you doing with that? What were you working on?
Nailing fastened frames together.
Oh,
on rivets.
With rivets?
Yeah, we had a man heat the rivets, put them in the holes, and the hammerman drove them down.
Was it hard work?
Ah, but it was noisy.
Oh.
I think that's what wrecked my ears.
You didn't have ear protection or anything in those days. Were you ever hurt on the job?
No. We had to turn our own frames over by hand. After we riveted one side, we had to turn them over and rivet the back side.
Oh.
Those had to be turned over. There were two men on one side and two men on the other side, and the two men to pick the frame up, stand up on its side, and the other two guys to catch it going down.
Is that right?
Yeah. And they finally put a chain hoist in to help us do that a little bit. We had to argue with them. That was before the days of the union.
Yes, I'm interested. Before I talk to you about the union, I wanted to ask about your own background. How far had you gone in school? What was your educational background before you started working?
Ninth grade.
You went to the ninth grade? Where'd you go to school?
I didn't go through the ninth grade. I went to the ninth grade.
Oh, to the ninth grade. And what school was that? Where was that?
Oh, North School.
In
South... On Miller Road.
On Miller Road in south of Lansing. What did you do? You quit school then at the end of the eighth grade. Why did you quit?
Well, I either had to quit or starve, one or the other. I was working for a farmer. And I got as far as I could go in school. It was just isn't fair to my work on the farm, and that's where I made my home.
Mm.
So I just quit school.
Were a lot of boys at that time quitting school and going to work on the farm?
Yeah, a lot of the farm boys, they go in the eighth grade, they quit. But those that went on to high school had to go to Holt.
How long did you stay on the farm?
I left there in 1925, went into the Army.
And
you were Air Force.
Army Air Force. And how old were you when you went into the Army?
I was in 3 years.
You went in at?
1925, discharged 1928.
Oh. What did you do in the Army?
I was an electrician.
Oh, you were? You hadn't known how to do that before they trained you?
Well, I learned that on the job.
Hmm. And so then you were discharged in 20...
Discharged in May, 1928. And I went to work at the Rio on June 18th, 1928.
So you weren't out of the Army very long.
I was out long enough to get broke, and then I had to go to work.
Let's go back and talk about the union a bit. You said you worked in the shops before the union came in.
Oh, yeah.
What was that like working without a union? Do you think
it was anything but pleasant.
Why was that? What?
You didn't have anything on your side. I've known of a foreman coming down the assembly line saying, "Eeny, meeny, miny, mo, you go get your time." And the guy said, "What'd I do?" He said, "Go get your time." He had a friend on the job.
You're all done. You're out.
And that was, he had no recourse. I mean, they just pushed you out.
No one.
The working conditions weren't the best. You had no relief set up for people to go to the job.
Mm-hmm.
We had no relief during the working hours.
Is that right? And you're working 10-hour days there for a while.
You worked a 10-hour day, you were there.
Well, you just got a lunch break and that was all, huh?
But, I don't know, there was a lot of bad about it, and there was probably some good to it. We all belonged to what they call the old Rio Association. We paid 10 cents a week out of our paycheck for our benefit association. And we got a ticket to go to the movies. We had movies once a week.
At the clubhouse?
At the clubhouse.
What other benefits did you get for your 10 cents a week?
Huh?
What other benefits were you supposed to get for that 10 cents a week?
We got death benefits for your youngsters or anybody that died in your family. I think when your sister died, I got $50. That paid for the funeral.
Oh, is that right?
But aside of any other benefits, there wasn't any.
What about safety on the job? You talked about having to turn the frames over by hand.
There wasn't any safety.
If somebody got hurt?
They got hurt, they took them to hospital uptown.
Sparrow Hospital or something?
I got hot scaled off the rivets in my eyes one time and flash off a rivet. They took me over to main plant to the hospital, and they sent me uptown to an ear, eye, and nose job doctor, and it inserted itself into the retina of my eye, and he dug it out of there and put a patch on it, sent me home, or back to work, whichever you want to call it.
You probably didn't dare be off from work too long, did you?
No.
Would they let you go if you were off for a few days?
Well, no, not really. I mean, if you were off through an illness or something, or accident, something like that, but if you just willfully took time off, you come in the next day, you might not have a job. This all happened before the days of the Union.
Before the days of the Union. Were you there in, was it 1935 when they had that labor holiday?
Yeah, there's a piece in the paper about it today, my union paper. I don't know whether you got it or not.
No, but I'd like to see it.
Well, I'll get it for you.
About the labor holiday.
Well, it was an illegal holiday, really. Lester Washburn was the president of the old AFL-CIO.
Okay.
And he was out of town on business. And his wife, Neva, and his three small children lived out on South Cedar at the time. She was in bed asleep. And the sheriff, old Mike McDonald, he just busted in the door and walked in and grabbed her out of bed in her nightclothes, took her downtown, threw her in jail. And he did it to get Lester to come back to town. Well, Lester got back to Lansing about 2 in the morning. She was in jail.
My gosh,
and he called the union authorities, and they declared a citywide strike. They closed everything up. Lansing was closed tighter than a drum. And we worked up till 11:30 that noon, and they shut the plant down and sent us home. There wasn't anybody. They had a big semi parked crossways of Washington Avenue down by Arbaugh's. And they had another one over on the north end of town. They all congregated down around the jail. The police disappeared.
Is that right?
They went by. They got off the streets.
They didn't want anything to do with it.
And they finally had what really started it was this strike over the City of Lansing Wrecking Company. They had a bunch of pickets out there, and they'd been battling with the people ahead of the wrecking company. And they put the pickets in jail along with her. They had to let them all out. But they'd have tore that town apart.
That was really illegal, taking her like that, wasn't it?
Well, it was tied up tired on drum.
Did you say that, or did you send it home with Jim?
Huh?
Did you
say... You went to school with...
Washburn, they went to school with his wife. His wife was one of the Canfield girls.
And this talks about...
Your aunt, Alma, married one of the Canfield clan. But that's the whole...
This is an interesting article.
Right,
remembering Lester Washburn, leader of the 1937 General Strike. That's the General Strike. Okay, the labor holiday, that was a different thing, wasn't it? This is interesting. I'd like to read that all.
That picture on there, I think that's taken out in front of City Hall.
Yeah, it says traffic ground to a halt as union members from every part of Lansing walked off their jobs.
Town tied up so tight you couldn't squeak.
Is that right? And so that was in protest?
Forcing them to let those people out of jail.
That was really what did it?
They had no business putting her in jail in the first place. The only reason they did it was to get him back to town.
Isn't that something? Boy.
You haven't got this turned on, have you?
Yes.
Well, turn it off for just a minute.
And Washburns lived on South Cedar. south part of Lansing, mm-hmm. fairly close to the shop then. A lot of people that worked at the reel lived right kind of around.
In the south end of Lansing, yeah.
How did you get to work? Did you have a car in those days?
Streetcar.
A nickel a ride?
No, well, you walked out to the main drive, caught the streetcar.
Oh. A lot of people I've talked to, either most all of them walked to work or...
A lot of them walked to work,
yeah.
Of course, very few was had automobiles.
Cars were expensive then, and what kind of wages were you making when you were working?
Day rate, 40 cents an hour when I was trucking stock. And when I went on piecework, you could make 60 cents an hour. If you made any over that, they had a time sitter right on your back.
Oh, really?
That's one reason why I quit when I did, first time.
When did you quit?
I sent this guy, my name was Patterson, up there to time us out. And the only timing he'd done was when you pulled the trigger on the spray gun, he started the watch. And when you finished your job spraying, he shut the watch off. If you had to go get stock, or if you had to go up to the paint department and get your paint, that was free gratis. You didn't get paid for that. The only way you got paid for it would be turning in day rate time.
You had to go get your own supplies?
Yeah, get your own stock and your own paint.
Hmm.
But when he put the watch on you, the only time that watch was running was while you was actually spraying the paint. And when they turned around and cut our rates, they cut it so bad we couldn't make 25 cents an hour, so I and the guy was finished, but we both quit.
In protest.
And I lived across the street from the truck plant at that time, and I went home.
The truck plant was on South Washington?
Yeah.
And Mount Hope, kind of in that area?
South of Mount Hope Avenue.
South of Mount Hope and on Washington.
I used to get downstairs and sit down there on a porch swing, or Newbridge, across the street from the truck plant. And the guy by the name of Bert Street was division superintendent, and he used to come out there on the ramp, and he'd look over and see me sitting out there. And I guess it kind of irked him a little bit, but they wasn't having any luck on getting into production because they had a crew hiring in, the crew working, and the crew quitting all the time. They couldn't make any money.
That was because...
It went on for about 10 days, and finally one day, cop came over with a slip of paper in his hand, and he said, "You take this over to the main plant, the office, and get hired back in again." That was about 9 o'clock in the morning, and I'm no bigger hurry. You haven't given me a fair deal, so I'm just going to let you hang. So I got over to the main plant about 11 o'clock that morning. And this Hilda Smith that you're talking about, she was the secretary in the employment office, and I got in line with a great big long line of guys, and she spotted me down there, and she come out there and motioned me in. Chewed me out for standing out there waiting. I got signed up, and she said, "You take this and go back over to the truck plant. They're waiting for you." I got over there about 1 o'clock in the afternoon and run right into the division superintendent, and he stomped all over me. "I sent for you at 9 o'clock this morning." I said, "No hurry to get over here." I said, "You wasn't in any hurry to raise my rates." So what they done, they just reinstated all the old rates because the guys couldn't make any money.
So they went back to 60 cents an hour?
Well, they went back to piecework. They would allow you to make 60 cents an hour. That was the limit.
That was as much as you could make an hour.
What caused the guy to come up in time was, we were running a bank. Well, we had stock piled up that we'd already done that we couldn't turn in. And we just keep track of it. We had a bank up there all the time.
Oh, I see. You kind of overproduced
and
then...
They had a day where we didn't run out of stock, we'd draw off the bank.
Oh, uh-huh.
And that's what caused the time center to come over there.
Oh, I see.
There's a guy by the name of Pat Patterson.
So
I always swore if I run into him down the street, I was going to flush him down the drain. But at any rate, after I left the spray room, I went down in the frame room and went to working down there with the crew. And I worked there until they transferred everybody from the truck plant over to the main plant. They rebuilt the main plant. They quit building pleasure cars. That was 1936. Seven. They moved us all over at the main plant. We worked over there for about a year when they shut the plant down. They went bankrupt. And they sent everybody home. They laid everybody off. In 39, I got a job over at the Fisher Body and I stayed there.
What'd you do at the Fisher Body?
Spray paint.
Spray paint. Were the conditions, when you went from Rio to Fisher, did you see a change in conditions for spray painting?
Not really.
It was...
Those booths were old booths that old Durant put in when he built the Star over there back in the 20s. And they were dirty. You go in there in the morning with clean clothes on, come out looking like somebody painted you. But we had showers, that much we had. We could change our clothes.
Did that get better over time? Did the working conditions get better?
As long as we were upstairs when they built the new paint shop downstairs, they moved us all down there. It was supposed to have been all air conditioned. And it was a lot better deal. Of course, that was after the unions came in. We had relief then.
Mm-hmm. And maybe some better working conditions.
Yeah, yeah.
Going back, you mentioned strike again, and I wanted to know, and unions. After the union came into the Rio, did things get better for you as a worker?
Nah, not really. I guess you could say it did some.
What ways would you think it was better?
We went on a strike. It was first sit-down strike in Lansing.
Were you involved in that?
Oh, yeah. I sat down there on my backside for a month during cold weather. And,
you were inside the building during
yeah,
the...
Yeah, we run everybody out. The supervision and all run them right out into the street. And we just took over the plant.
Were you a little bit worried about how that was going to come out?
We cleaned machinery. We swept the floor. We cleaned the building.
Oh, that's interesting.
And kept busy.
Oh, I didn't know that.
We had our own kitchen. We had our own minister on Sunday.
You did?
By the way, that minister almost lost his congregation over that. They wouldn't approve of it.
Is that a fact?
It was a minister from East Lansing. And, of course, they were dead set against it. Organized labor out there at the college. He was a minister of that Unitarian Church out there.
Mm-hmm.
But at any rate...
And he would come into the... He was allowed to come in and go out. Nobody tried to stop him.
Nobody else was allowed in. Nobody... We were thinking to go home one day a week.
Oh, you could? Oh, I didn't know that either.
We didn't get any strike pay or anything like that. We want neighbors and some people like that sympathize with the union's activities. Maybe when they donated or things like that, but we never got any strike pay like they get now.
Well, you said you had your own kitchens. Where'd you get your food?
Went out and begged. They go around to the store, tell them who we were, what the deal was. They contributed.
Rio was important to Lansing's economy, so I imagine the merchants...
Yeah, they were, but they were going downhill.
Rio was, you're
yeah,
saying?
They built that Rio Royal in 1931, and that's what put them on the skids.
And you had the Depression and everything else feeding into
they
it.
Yeah, they never come back.
Yeah.
Then they quit building the pleasure cars.
Mm-hmm.
1937, I think, was the last one they built.
We've got a 1936 Flying Cloud at the museum, and I've been told that was the last model that was put out. It was stripped down. It didn't have all the luxury items on it because he thought it wouldn't sell if he had it.
That one that was down there when I was there?
Yeah.
Well, that's a Royal.
Oh, we have that, too. We also have a 1936 Flying Cloud.
Well, there was another one they built. They built the old real Wolverine.
Oh, the Wolverine, yep.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That was a four-door sedan.
It was.
They never built one. They only built the sedan. They didn't build any cabs or anything like that. They just built a sedan.
I see.
A two-door and a four-door. That was the only thing they built. But they built a good car. They built a darn good truck. You couldn't wear those things out. It was impossible. My stepdad had a real, quite a real wagon they called a speed wagon.
Yep.
The old real T6 was a four-door sedan, and it was just a, it was a truck chassis and motor with a pleasure car body mounted on it. Really, that was all it was.
Really?
But you couldn't wear them out. Huh. And that was one, I think, one of the reasons why the real kind of went haywire, because there was no replacement. But they had a foreign shipment over at truck plant that Ford Motor Company tried their best to buy it. The real wouldn't sell it. They shipped trucks all over the world.
And what did Ford want to do?
He wanted the truck business. He didn't want the plant. He just wanted their foreign shipment business.
He wanted their foreign markets?
Yeah, because they were shipping trucks all over the world.
So he wanted to buy it out or something?
He wanted to buy that part of the business out.
And they wouldn't sell it?
No, they had too good a thing going there.
Oh, sure.
Shoot, that plant was working 7 days a week. And that's why this Washburn worked. He was a carpenter over there. They'd take these jobs over there. If they come off the line, they'd run them over there, and then they'd dismantle them and pack them in these great big, long packing boxes. And they were loaded on ships or hauled out of there, loaded on ships and sent out. They had a worldwide market on that. And Ford tried, he wasn't doing too good with these trucks. He tried to buy it, but they wouldn't sell it.
I interviewed somebody recently who worked at the line next to where those trucks were broken down, and they said that women were working on that line, and they were breaking the trucks down and packing them. And he said they could take
women.
A truck apart. That's what he said. He said they could take a truck apart in no time.
There wasn't any women worked there.
That took the trucks apart that were put into the packing cases?
Men, the only women, there wasn't any women working there.
All
the war.
Oh, really? It was just mostly men? You never saw any women in your department?
I never saw any women anywhere at the truck plant.
Is that in the truck plant? Okay.
No, I never saw any women around here. If they were, they kept out of sight because we never had any.
You said during the war, honey.
No, I was talking...
No.
Well, maybe this did happen during the war.
Before the war.
Yeah. Let me see now. What do I want to ask you next? Oh, I know what I want to ask you. We mentioned the clubhouse just briefly, and you went to the clubhouse. You had a movie pass. You could go to the clubhouse?
Yeah, once a month, I think it was, or once every 3 months, I forget which it was, they give you a card. That was your pass to the movies, or a pass to the clubhouse. You could go to the movies on Thursday night, and use the clubhouse, and club rooms. They had a big bowling alley downstairs.
Did you ever go down there?
No, I never went down there. They had a family room where people bring their children. They had a cafeteria. It was a beautiful cafeteria down below the clubhouse.
Oh, really? What about the radio station? I've heard about WRAO.
Well, they built that radio station when radio first came in. And it was up in the top floor of the clubhouse, way up in the top of it.
What was that, a three-floor building?
Well, I don't know how many floors there was, too, but this radio station was clear up on the top of the building.
I see.
And they had two great big masts. That's one set on one end of the building and one on the other end. Michigan State Police bought one of them. I don't know whether they're still standing up there to Houghton Lake or not.
Oh, the tower?
Yeah, the tower.
Is that right?
But
that's interesting.
It was a 1 kilowatt transmitter. They broadcast, they had their own orchestra. And they broadcast on Thursday nights chamber music. I forget how long the program run, but I was a kid on the farm when they brought that in, and I had gone down to Larrabee's and I bought the parts for a crystal set. And I and the kid where I was living, we put that thing together. And we run the antennas from the old silo over to the house upstairs bedroom. And on Thursday nights, we tickle that old Galena crystal till we could find the music, and then we'd have one headphone, I had part of the other part of it, and we lay there listening to the reel.
Oh, that must have been a real treat.
But when tube radios came in, I bought a one-tube radio at Crosley from Larrabee Sports Shop. And got a battery and the whole ball of wax. And then we could listen to the stock reports and the grain reports of the college, WKAR, and then the reel on Thursday night. And once in a while, we'd pick up the East Coast station. But pretty primitive, I'll tell you, when you stop and look at them now. But at any rate, we were up there one night listening to the radio, and a storm came up, and the lightning hit the antenna.
Oh!
It melted that antenna into a million pieces, and it knocked the headphone right off our head and burned up the crystal set. And we didn't have any ground on it, but that ended that for a while.
Oh, you were the ground.
Yeah.
It's a wonder it didn't fry your ears. My gosh, what a shock. Next to the Rio Clubhouse, this was in the 30s, but I remember that there was a big train wreck.
Yeah.
What do you remember about that?
Yeah, I was coming down Washington Avenue, and I crossed the Grand Trunk Railroad tracks, and I was headed south. I don't think I was more than a block away when that train come through there. Hit that tower. There was a kid peddling papers out there on the front of the station, passenger station.
Uh-huh, the depot.
And when that train jumped the tracks, it wiped that station partner, wiped it right off the map.
Is that
and
right?
And killed him.
Oh, killed that little boy.
I couldn't have been more than a block away from it when it happened.
You must have been pretty shocked, all this noise going on behind you.
I heard the cracking, the commotion, but I didn't stop.
Oh, you didn't?
But this train comes through. I don't really remember what caused the wreck, but it jumped the tracks.
The entire train?
And it went right into the track side of the station. Knocked that tower down.
The signal tower,
yeah.
I guess they used to call it. What about the man inside the tower? I wonder if
he survived it all right.
He did.
But,
did it damage the clubhouse at all, or did everything go on the north side of the cars?
South side of the tracks were on the south side of the station.
Mm-hmm. And the clubhouse was on the other side.
Clubhouse was out in front on Washington Avenue.
Uh-huh.
The only thing that bordered the tracks that belonged to the reel was a foreign shipment building.
Oh, okay.
But anyway, it wiped that station, the front part of that station, right off the map.
What year would that have been, do you think? 1936 or somewhere in there?
Oh, Lordy, I don't remember now just when it was.
Seems like I was about 5, and that would have been 36.
I think it was right around there somewhere.
Uh-huh. I remember that we went down. A neighbor took us down in their car so we could see it later in the day. It was raining. I remember that. I remember seeing those cars laying
all
over.
I don't remember what year that was, to be honest
with you. Yeah. Let's see here. Do you remember having ever seen in Lansing, you've seen the Ari Olds home, I'm sure. Did you ever see Mr. Olds himself? Never did.
No. Well, we were youngsters. We used to go uptown to the show on Saturday, and Ari Olds lived in that big mansion on the corner of Main Street and Washington Avenue, and they'd have garden parties out there.
Ooh.
And those kids would hang around that hedgerow out there on Washington Avenue and watch them.
So, all in all, your years at Rio probably weren't any worse than they would have been working anywhere else? So?
No, they were all about the same. I worked there 11 years. And then I went back and worked during the war, but...
You went back to the Rio during the war?
Yeah.
When did you go back? 41, 42, or?
Oh, they shut us down. They transferred 600 of us from Fisher over to Olds. Finish up car production.
Oh, really?
And then I worked over there, I think, about a couple of months.
At
At the Oldsmobile.
At the Oldsmobile, finishing up cars.
And when they shut that, finally shut it down, they laid everybody off. I was on my way home when I run into this Hilda Smith that day, and she stopped me and she says, "I don't know if I got laid off." And I said, "Yeah." She said, "I suppose my husband did too. He worked at Fisher." I said, "I don't know." He said, "He probably did." But I went on home. And about 5 o'clock that next morning, somebody started pounding on my front door. And I got up and went to the door, and there stood a cop.
Lansing policeman?
Real.
Oh, a Rio.
And he had a slip of paper in his hand. Said, "You're supposed to be over at the Rio at 8 o'clock this morning." I didn't ask her for a job. She, that was when they was putting that Navy ordnance plant into production.
Oh.
And they had one shift on, and they were putting a second shift on.
Oh.
So she just arbitrarily went back in and made out in a higher end slip and told the cop, "Bring it over and give it to me." So I went over there and went to work.
What did you, and you went into the Navy Department? What were they doing in there?
Building bomb fuses.
Oh, really? What was your job?
I was a machine setup man.
Oh, you were? That's like, is that like tool and die, or is that putting the dies on the machine?
No, we had to set the machines and keep the tools going. We had to make out the time for, it was all group work. We had to make out the time at night.
Group work?
Yeah, we, what they call group work. You all worked in a group. And when you made out the time at night, you took the final count off the last operation and divided it into the number of people on the group.
Oh, really? Isn't
it was all it was all piecework at the time.
I see.
They never would, you couldn't get the real to agree to day work. It was all piecework. But anyway, I worked there till the war ended, and then I went back over to Fisher.
You were transferred back, or you had to rehire back in?
Oh, I got recalled to Fisher body.
Oh, after peacetime production started?
I go back over and got, had, well, I didn't have to rehire, I got signed in again. Because I had a leave of absence for the duration of the war.
Oh, for the duration of the war.
I just had to go over and turn my leave of absence in and got reassigned.
What did Fisher do during the war? What did they produce?
They built anti-aircraft gun mounts and rear stabilizers for these big bombers.
Oh, I didn't know that. And Rio made trucks?
They wasn't going to do anything. They were going to mothball the plant.
Oh, they were?
And they didn't want to tear it apart. And the Union, well, I was over at the Rio when that happened. But the Union threw a big picket line around the plant and demanded that they avail themselves of the war work that was being let out. And they had quite a row over there with them, and they finally gave in and remodeled the plant. And they made a, down to where the body plant was, where they built the bodies, they turned that into a big long line where they welded gun mounts for the naval aircraft, or naval ground forces.
Hmm.
And then they got this contract for rear stabilizer fins for the big bombers.
That's interesting. No one's ever told me
but
that
they
before.
They wasn't going to take any war work. They were just going to mothball the plant.
Just shut it down.
But they got, the Union forced them into it.
And they got a contract from the government. And they probably got
all kinds of work. But they called me back to work over there, sent for me, and I went over there. I was working at the Rio in the Naval Ordnance Plant at the time, and they sent for me, and I went over on a Saturday morning. They were going to send me over to the old Ryan Bowen plant on sandblasting, and I wouldn't go. And I said, "No, I'm not going to take that job. I'm already working in a machine shop over at the Rio." So we didn't have any labor relations at that time, but we had a personnel director. So they sent me in to see old man Burroughs.
This was
I don't know what the problem was. And I said, "Well," I said, I'm employed doing water work over to the Rio." And I said, They've sent for me to send me over to Rainbow, and I'm sandblasting them. I'm not going to take it. I said, I don't have enough. I didn't have enough seniority there to worry about. And he said, well, he said, if you're working on a war job, you don't have to. So he made me out a leave of absence for the duration. And I signed it, and the next day I got it in the mail.
Oh.
So when they notified the union that if they sent for you to come back to work and you didn't show up, you were automatically fired. Well, of course, I refused to take the job on sandblasting. What we were doing was sandblasting the big shell casings. And the union and the government got into it, and the government said, if they're working on war work, so be it. They ain't going to lose us. It was going to cancel our seniority.
Is that right?
General Motors was. And they said, well, if they're working on war work at the Rio or wherever, they don't have to come back. So I got a leave of absence from Fisher, went to work, went back to the Rio, but when they sent that notice out that we had to come back over there, we'd lose our seniority, and that's when they went to bat with the government on it. The War Labor Relations Board took it up, and they told General Motors that their employees that were working in on war production and other plants was entitled to their seniority. They couldn't fire us. So when I went back there in the fall and winter of 45, I had all seniority back.
Great.
I didn't lose anything on it.
That is interesting.
And then we just gotten back and gotten our feet on us when they pulled that strike. Mm. And we were on strike all winter.
After the war. Uh-huh. There were a lot of strikes right after the war, I remember.
Yeah, well.
Coal strike, steel strike, and I suppose. Well, do you remember what kind of money you were making during the war when you were working in the Navy ordnance?
$1.10 an hour.
Boy, that was quite a jump from 60 cents.
That was day rate. Well, the rest of the operators, machine operators, were drawing piecework, but I was on day rate.
So you were making more.
I got $1.10 an hour. And when I left there and went back to Fisher Body, I only got $1 an hour.
Oh, you had to take a cut.
And then we got a raise. I went to $1.05. And then I went to $1.10 an hour. And then it just kept going up to when I retired, I was getting $6 an hour. That was 22 years ago.
What kind of changes did you see from the very beginning when you were painting truck wheels to when you retired? What kind of changes did you see in the process of painting?
You're talking about changes. All you got to do is look at the cars today and see the changes. Working conditions was considerably better. Over at Fisher, we had our own shower room, our own locker rooms.
This is after the war.
Well, we didn't have that at Rio.
What kind of safety equipment for the worker? Any kind of masks or any kind of anything to keep you from inhaling?
What plant are you talking about?
I'm talking about the Fisher, I guess, now. You said at the Rio there wasn't any.
We had respirators you wore over your face. Our booze were, we had big blowers to take care of the paint, but they done a poor job of it.
Oh, did they really?
Well, we were upstairs in the old paint shop. They didn't work very good. But when we moved downstairs, everything was sucked down into the water. We worked over big water tanks.
Oh, really? And this was after the war, much later.
Yeah, once a week, they cleaned those tanks out. I don't know where they hauled that stuff, but they cleaned it out.
You didn't have to pound it with a hammer anymore once a week to clean it out.
But over at the Rio, we didn't have anything. We'd come out at the end of the day's work and everything we had on was all orange because everything got painted orange over there.
Oh, it did? That was a primer?
We only had two cars. One was orange and the other was green, Pullman green.
Hmm.
And we painted all the trucks and the wheels were painted orange unless it was scheduled different.
I see.
But we'd come out of there at night, you couldn't tell us from a bucket of orange paint.
And you must
we didn't have any place to change clothes and no place to wash up or anything like that.
Hmm. What kind of, when it was lunchtime, did you have to eat right there on the line?
No, we had, when it hit the old reel, we had an hour off for noon.
Oh.
at Fisher, we got a half hour.
It's not much time.
I first went there, I really got 15 minutes, to be honest about it.
And you weren't getting any breaks, like a morning break or an afternoon break?
We had a relief man, but you only got, I think it was two jobs in the morning and one in the afternoon, because the morning hours were, the line run 5 hours before it shut down for noon. And then the afternoon, they'd run the balance of the 8 hours, and we only had one job or eight. Mm. You could just about make it around the corner and back.
Yeah. But at the Rio, you worked right straight through. You had an hour for lunch, but
they worked right straight.
And did you always work a day shift at the Rio? I'm talking about before you quit and went back during the war.
No, I didn't. During the time that I went there, the first 11 years I worked there, it was all days.
All days. When did you go?
During the war, I worked nights.
During the war, you worked nights. They had, three shifts during the war?
Yeah.
Days, afternoons, and...
That's how Hilda got me signed up in there, was when they put the second shift on. And then they eventually put the third shift on. We were running 24 hours a day.
Isn't that amazing? I remember we used to hear the big hammers from the drop forges going all over Lansing, and we used to smell the stuff when we go by the shops.
The funny thing about them, I lived across the street from the old Federal drop forge, and I got to where those hammers didn't bother me a darn bit. I could drop right off to sleep at night. And one night they had an accident or something over there, and they shut the place down. And I woke right out of a sound sleep. There was nothing wrong with me, it was just thought those hammers had quit hammering over there, and the silence woke me up.
Let me see, I had something else in mind. What the heck was it? I know. Everybody that we've talked to, or almost everybody, has talked about Rio being a kind of a family place. They felt...
It was.
Did
it
you
was
feel that way, too?
It was a family affair. We used to get a magazine called A Rio Family.
Oh, you did?
Rio Spirit.
Rio Spirit.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, it was more or less a family. I mean, you were entitled to all the clubhouse privileges, the movies, the bowling alleys, and the reading room, the family rooms, cafeteria.
Did you feel like you knew some of the management, that if you had a problem you could go to them?
I didn't know any of the management. We didn't get in contact with them. During the war, I knew one guy that had taken over the head of the Rio.
His
name was Steinbauer.
Steinbauer?
Yeah, but he got tangled up with some chick down there on the line. She pushed him right out of his job. He got playing around, and he dumped her, I guess. She made a great big howdy-do of it right there on the line that one day. And very poor guy, he wouldn't believe it.
So he left.
And I guess they let him go.
Huh. When you were working there during the war and the women started coming in and working in the shops, do you remember there being... That was kind of new to have women working on the line. They hadn't been before. Do you recall that they had any problems with the women coming in?
I suppose you always have problems when you have a mixture of like that. They were no different than anybody else that employed male and female workers. They all had problems.
You don't think the women were treated badly or singled out for any kind of a...
Oh, I didn't think they were. Well, I worked there in the Navy plant during the war.
I want to ask her about that.
Don't ask me, because I don't remember nothing.
Yes, you do.
I don't either.
Well, I thank you very much. Is there anything else you can think of that...
Nothing that I hate to see the big vacant space out there with a real could have been something that it should have been.
I agree with you.
But they got tangled up with the promoters on the East Coast. They sent a guy by the name of White down there. The news on the East Coast want controlling interest for real. That was 1931. And they, when they built that Royal. And they sent that guy down here and he took it over, and that was a fiasco right from the word go.
The Royals weren't, they were in production, but they didn't make a lot of those, did they?
No, they didn't. It wasn't any good.
Why wasn't it any good?
Well, the body was too big for the chassis, for one thing.
Is that right?
They go around the corner, the doors to fly open.
Were those the doors that opened from the front backwards, like the old suicide doors, as I've heard them called?
Probably were. Probably. I don't remember now.
But you're saying that those didn't stay shut?
What you got to do is look at that one you got down there, and I'll even tell which way the doors open.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they opened from the front.
From the front. Well, that was
yeah, but that's a deluxe model, and they must have made, were all the Royals a deluxe car?
Oh, yeah.
They all were. Okay.
Driving him with Tige Royce was a test driver.
Tige Royce?
Yeah, he was a test driver for that real Royal. And he lit out of there one day on Old 27 toward St. John's. And all he had was just a chassis and the motor and four wheels of steering gear.
And something to sit on.
He didn't have no body or anything on it. You go out there in that cold air. And a state policeman got after him. Well, he was in St. John's and turned around and headed back when the state police pulled in. And the guy stopped him. He said, "What in the name of sense are you driving there?" He said, "Real Royal death chassis, why?" He said, I never did catch up with you. All he had in there, he was an 8-cylinder engine, if I remember right, either that or a 6. But it was a stripped down, just a chassis. And they just take the run from Lansing to St. John's and back just to check them out.
Well, that was their test track, so to speak.
But, no, they didn't build it too long. It was a belly-up job to begin with. I mean, they sunk everything they had into that real Royal, and I think that's really what put them on the skid.
Mm.
But they wanted a bunch of us to transfer from the truck plant over to the main plant to work on that Royal. I wouldn't go, because I just had a sneaky feeling that wasn't going to work.
And then you'd be...
So I refused it, and those guys didn't work too long, and they went out of business. But they built quite a few of them. They were supposed to be the ultimate. But I remember they built the real Wolverine.
What kind of a car was that?
A 6-cylinder car, 4-door sedan. And they built the one in between. And then they built the Royal.
That Wolverine
flying cloud,
was
that? The Wolverine, the Flying Cloud, and the Royal.
Yes.
Well, the Wolverine and the Flying Cloud were... They were a good car. You couldn't wear them out.
Oh.
But the last one they built for the Flying Cloud was 1937. And they just quit building it. They wanted to build my Royal. So that was a fiasco right from the word go. So they really done themselves dirty when they did that. They lost their personal touch. It was real, it was a family affair, right, management right on down. But when they began to sell stock, a bunch on the East Coast got control of it, and they sent this guy White down there. He was a Jew, and he really finished it up.
It went through several changes, and it ended up being managed by F.L. Capert, ran it into bankruptcy.
They merged with White Motor Company, I guess, White Truck Company.
Mm-hmm.
And then they merged with some other outfit.
It was Diamond T for a while.
And it didn't work out. 1938, when they went belly up, laid everybody off. They went through bankruptcy.
When it was White Motor Company, probably.
Well, I went over to Fisher and went to work in 39, and they got their bankruptcy all cleaned up, and they had an appointed overseer, a guy by the name of Fry. He was, at one time, he was Secretary of State or Secretary of the Treasury of the State of Michigan, and they appointed him as a boss, really, he took all the plant right over. And they paid off their debts. And then they went back to production. Well, I had top seniority in the frame room, and they couldn't hire anybody unless under the union contracts. That was how the quitter came back to work. And I went back to work there one summer during the changeover at Fisher. But that fall when Fisher went back to production, I got called back, I quit.
You quit the reel.
And I went back to Fisher Body.
Mm-hmm.
But I either had to come back to work or I had to quit one or the other, so because they couldn't hire anybody unless I did one of two things. But it didn't work out. The only thing that saved them was the war. They would have gone bankrupt before that again, had it not been for the war.
Getting that big truck contract from the Army.
But the war put them back on their feet.
Did you ever see the Eager Beaver that Rio made during the war, the amphibious truck?
Yeah. They built a lot of those experimental jobs.
Yeah.
One of them they had there, that thing go like a grease lightning. But I guess one shell in the right place and they just fly apart.
Oh, really?
They weren't what you could call good material.
Oh.
Well, yeah, they built a lot of experimental jobs there down on Baker Street, down in the old motor plant. But I don't know. They had one they built for the airport. And that was that most huge piece of machinery you ever looked at. It had two engines in it.
One engine
drove it, the other engine drove the plow. And they built for the airport.
Oh, to plow the runways?
Plow the runways.
Oh, I see.
But they cracked the runways. It was so heavy.
Is that a fact?
Oh, it was a huge piece of machinery, and they had it stored up on the north side of the old reel.
Huh.
And it sat out there for a long time. They finally went out there one day with a crew and mud and cutting torches, and they cut it up.
Hmm. That's interesting. I haven't heard that before.
Oh, yeah, that was quite a piece of machinery. The only trouble was it was too heavy, it cracked the runway.
I was just thinking about, I remember that there used to be an overhead tramway or runway or something between the Rio and the...
That was the polish line.
The what?
Polish line.
What was that?
Well, they polished the paint after they come out of paint.
Oh, after they dried?
Yeah.
I was going to ask you that. After you painted it, where did the vehicle go, or where did the truck go after you got through painting its wheels?
Oh, they put the wheels, went on a conveyor, went upstairs.
They
put them on the truck up there.
The wheels went up? Okay, then where
did... They had a good layoff production-wise, but then I think the highest they ever built an hour was... They was geared for 130 jobs a day. Well, I don't think they ever built that many.
Yeah. That's a lot of trucks, though.
Everything was laid out good, I mean, as far as that went. Our frames were all, when they got down to the end of the line, they were painted. And then they went up on a big chain hoist upstairs, put on the line. But had the thing worked the way it was laid out to work, it would have been a good deal, but it wasn't. Because we had a lot of frames we built had to go outside and be stacked up because they couldn't handle them upstairs.
Too many?
Too many. They weren't running that amount of production.
Oh.
Yeah, they had a good layout. There was no doubt about that. But that was when they built the new plant. See, the old plant, the old real truck plant, was the original duplex truck plant.
Now, that was South Washington again.
Yeah, they built the old duplex truck over there.
Oh, yes, I guess that's right.
That was a chain drive truck.
Chain drive?
Yeah, they had a chain on each side of the back wheel. The chain drove the wheels.
Oh, okay.
But they moved that, they sold that to the Rio, and they moved over on, was over there where the welfare office was.
No.
I can't think of where they moved that duplex
to. South Cedar?
But they built it. They were all hand-built models that they built.
They were, that
they
duplex.
They were built on assembly line. They were just built hand by hand.
Hmm.
They were a good truck. They used them on the highways. That's what they were for. But they finally went out of business. I can't think of the name of the street, but they set up a shop over there.
Would it have been South Cedar?
No, it runs to me, it runs in my mind, it was east off of North Cedar.
Oh, okay.
Well, I can't think of the name of the street now, but anyway,
they
bought a small plant over there, and all the trucks were all hand-built. They were big monsters, as far as that went. They used them on the highways.
What about Porter Street, is that?
Huh?
Porter Street?
No, it wasn't.
Because that's where exhibit and display is for Oldsmobile, but that's a very old building, and that's why I got to wondering.
I don't remember
okay.
how it was.
Well, that's all right. It doesn't matter. Yeah, it's strange to go by Cedar and Baker and Washington, and that's
I
all.
Know. I hate to see them turn that out there.
And everybody that I've talked to feels so bad about the clubhouse being torn down.
Well, General Motors at one time, Oldsmobile to be exact, wanted to buy, well, they did use part of the old truck plant. That was the old plant, and not the old plant, but the new plant they built. I don't wonder what Oldsmobile had in there. It was stock or what it was. But they at least part of that old truck plant. And the word was that they wanted to buy it at one time, but I guess that didn't work out.
Hmm.
Motor Wheel used that plant for a long, long time. They built stoves. They could heat your heater for your house.
I see. Hmm.
I think that was in the what we call the new plant. It's outside of the old plant. I think Motor Wheel had that plant for a long time. They built those furnaces down there.
Oh, that's interesting. I didn't know that. I hadn't heard that about the furnaces before. Well, I thank you very much. You've shared a lot of interesting things with us.
A lot of stuff I don't remember anymore.
Well, you remembered a lot. Thank you.
They came in the back end of the plant on the ground floor.
The union people?
Well, they had the stop boards on one side of the tracks. And the real truck plant was on this side of the tracks.
On South Park?
The nice short tracks.
Okay.
And all you had to do was walk down the tracks, come in the back end of the building, because there wasn't any watchmen down there.
Oh.
And this guy came in, the plant was almost known. He had a whole thick stack of cards. And he started passing them out. He was an organizer for the AFL-CIO.
Oh. What were these cards about?
They were application cards to join the union.
Oh.
And everybody that I knew anything about signed them. It was almost 100%.
Did you sign yours?
Darn right I signed it. At any rate, when the management found out about it, they run the guy out of there. And the plant protection owner took him out. But he had distributed about all the cards he had.
So he'd done this,
and then
job.
We started having meetings uptown up over the old Plaza Theater.
On North Washington.
Yeah. Uh-huh. And discussing what they could and couldn't do. But when the real people in there, they organized a company union. And the ridiculous part of it was that we had a great big meeting over there in the old real clubhouse in the auditorium. And had a guy in there, he was a company man, and he was walking up and down the aisle and asking you what you wanted. More money? We'll get it. Oh my God, we had begged and begged and begged to get off piecework on a day rate. Nothing doing. But all of a sudden, they're ready to give in. See, they give you anything you want. You want more money? We'll get it for you. You want better work condition? We'll get it for you. Well, it didn't work.
Nobody believed him?
No, they didn't believe him. They'd done work. They'd worked there. Some of them guys had worked there long before I ever worked there. And they'd gotten used to this whole line of guff.
Oh, it had happened before.
They just didn't take it. They wouldn't go for it. But anyway, I used to have reunion meetings uptown over the old Plaza Theater. And I remember when they took the vote to strike, an old fella, he was a maintenance man from the main plant, an old bullheaded guy. And they had the votes, they had these big tanks where they put your ballot in after you voted. And we was they were running two shifts over in the main plant. And they wanted to open the ballot box as soon as the voting was over for the day shift. They wanted to open the ballot box. And this old man right over sat down on one of them. He said, there ain't nobody going to open these ballot boxes until both shifts have voted. Period. So, of course, it went over.
Overwhelmingly, probably.
Well, there was a lot of them that didn't believe in the unions. You got a son-in-law who don't believe in them. Yet he's taking their benefits. But he's like his dad, Tony, you know. You never get talk unions, Tony.
Well, of course, Tony never worked in a shop either.
No, but his boys the same way. The only reason he belongs to the union is because he had to. But if it hadn't been for the union, he wouldn't be working today. He'd be out on the street.
So there's a lot of good things about the union. And
there's more good things than there is bad things. There isn't anything that you can think of that is organized that isn't a good part and a bad part to it. Your churches, your government, or whatever, there's a good and there's a bad part of it. It's up to you to differentiate between the two of them.
After the union came in, you guys voted it in, were you treated any differently by supervision?
Not very much.
They didn't, because they weren't part of the union, the management wasn't,
no,
so I wondered
allowed,
how
they weren't allowed to join the union at all.
Did they resent it because you had were going to
so.
Be earning more?
I don't think so. If I remember right, Chrysler Corporation was the only one that allowed supervision to join the union.
Oh, really?
Well, I might be wrong, but it seems to me I remember that they did. Ford Motor Company was the only other holdout, and they had a battle royal down there that busted a lot of heads.
And the big Flint strikes where people got...
Well, that Flint, of course, they always hype that Flint strike, the Flint Fisher one, but they weren't the first ones, the real motor car company in Hudson, Detroit, were the first two to go down on the sit-down strike.
Oh, they were?
Because we were inside that plant when Flint Fisher 1 went on strike.
Oh, you were already on strike.
We already put our time in.
Nobody really got hurt in your sit-down strike, did they?
No.
You didn't have any violence?
No, we didn't have no violence. Well, we had one guy there was carrying a gun. But they got wind of that, and they threw him out.
So his co-workers did, you mean?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. They didn't want it. They didn't want it to disintegrate into a...
No clubs, no guns, no nothing.
Peaceful.
Yeah, well, you go by that plant on a Sunday, you wouldn't know there was anybody in there.
Is that right? I talked to somebody a while back whose husband was in there in the strike. He's dead now, so I couldn't talk to him, obviously, but she remembered that he could go out of a window at the back part of the plant over, I think, in the Cedar Baker area, and he went home because he was worried about his family, and then he'd go back the next day.
A lot of them did. We got one day a week off. A lot of them did that, went out the window, but a lot of them went out the window the day the strike was pulled, but the guys caught them with their britches and pulled them back in again.
So, but you stayed.
Darn right I stayed.
Were you worried about your family?
I worried about them, yes, I did, but there wasn't much we could do about it.
Uh-huh.
Go home one day a week, see how everything was going, but...
What did you do? You weren't getting paid. How'd the family survive without any money?
Donations.
Donations. That was kind of... You'd take them in and divide them out among the families? Oh, that's interesting.
Went into debt.
Yeah,
I'll tell you. The day that labor holiday was pulled, they shut us down at 11:30 at noon. And we went downtown to Boston for a while, then I finally got on the bus and went home. All the neighbors around there had their wash tubs full of water and milk cans and pails and basins. And what's all this for? Why are they going to shut our water off? You're crazy.
Why did they think that?
You don't get your water from the city of Lansing. What's the matter with you?
Oh, you were living at Holt.
Your mother had everything she could think of full of water. I said, well, he can water the garden, I guess. We didn't have no, we had our own water wells.
This was outside of Lansing at Holt?
Yeah, this was out to Holt.
Well, okay, what about the people in Lansing? Were they under threat of having
their... They didn't shut no water off.
But they thought they were going to? They'd been threatened?
They shut the city down as far as that went, but they didn't interfere with water departments or anything like that. But mainly, when they shut it down, mainly it was out there on the Four Corners, Michigan and Washington. They went out, they sent it. Flying squad out to East Lansing that never should have done it in the first place.
This was the Lansing Police Department, did you mean?
No, the Union did.
The Union did.
They wanted to shut East Lansing down. Well, East Lansing had no part of that quarrel. They weren't involved. They sent a flying squad out there to shut the city down. The students threw them in the river.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
They did. They bounced them into the Red Cedar River. And I didn't blame them in it. They had no part of that quarrel.
Big excitement. That must have been headlines in the paper for 2 weeks.
No, yeah, well, there wasn't nothing in this article about it. But
no, I'm talking about the Lansing State Jail.
That's what happened. They sent that squad of men out there to shut East Lansing down. And the students here at Michigan State met them right at the city limits.
Yes,
sir. And they got into a brouhaha with it. They threw them in a river. Well, I didn't blame them, because East Lansing had no part of that quarrel.
The labor holiday only lasted one day, did it?
Just one day.
Just the one day, and then everybody went back to
work. So they let them people out of jail, it was disbanded.
That is so interesting.
A guy by the name of Murphy was governor at the time, and they had a big gathering up on the Capitol lawn, and he got up and made a speech.
Oh, he did?
Yeah. But they...
He wanted everybody to kind of go back
to work. They brought it on themselves when they... They just used old tactics like that for you. They just went out and grabbed the pickets, put them down, threw them in jail. She was in jail with her night clothes. I didn't blame Les Walker for what he did. I mean, it was illegal to begin with. They broke into the home. They had no warrant or nothing.
I wonder if he ever thought of suing them or... People don't probably sue each other as easily then as they do now, but I just wonder what kind of action he took.
Well, no suit then or anything like that, but they should have sued the city of Lansing, right?
That's what I'm thinking.
They should have sued their pants right off of them, but they didn't. What they did do was shut the city right down. Movie theaters, stores, police, run the police right off the street. The state police didn't get into it, for a wonder. They had everything shut down. I guess they couldn't get shut down. Shut the automobile, Fisher Body, and Ryan Bowen, and them all went down.
Hmm.
They lasted just the one day, but also they turned them loose when they ended it.
This is kind of off the record. This has nothing to do with Rio, but I've just for my own information, I was thinking about Uncle Allie, and he worked for the state police, didn't he?
Allie? Yeah.
He wasn't a policeman, but he worked for them?
He went to work for the Michigan State Police before my father died. And he was up across the streets, and that's when they were horse-mounted. And when my dad died, he wanted to come down to the funeral. And he went to the then head of the state constabulary, they called it then. He said, no, I can't do it. And he said, well, what other out do I have? He said, you can quit and go to the funeral, and you come back and rehire. Well, that's the only way I can do it. So Allie quit. But he came back down to the funeral, and when the film was over, he went back up north and rehired. And then the state constabulary eventually worked into the state police.
I see.
But he was their first radio operator.
It didn't.
First one they had.
Don't I remember that he kind of pioneered that radios in the cars?
He was into ham radio anyway, but he was always into signaling means on everyone. He lived upstairs over our house here in Ionia. He had gathered up some signaling equipment like they use on the railroad. Key and clicker and all that stuff.
Oh, like Morse code and stuff?
He was always fooling around with that. Now, of course, when radio came in, he went and fooled around with radio. But he had to leave it when the state civil service came into existence. They put the state police on the civil service.
When would that have been?
And you had to have high school education or the equivalent. Well, Scribner never got past the third grade.
Is that right?
Oh, no, past the third grade, but he was as smart as a whip, but he never got past the third grade.
Huh.
And of course, that let him out.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So rather than let him out of the state police entirely, they put him in the uniform squad and they put him down on dispatchers. And where he got his claim to fame down on the dispatcher's desk was a guy, I can't think of the fellow's name, but he...
A criminal?
He shot and killed a state police trooper.
In Lansing?
Yeah. And he took the trooper's car and he headed out toward Jackson. Well, of course, they called it in because the cars weren't, very few of the cars were equipped with two-way radio. And as soon as he got called in, he went on the air with it. And they had a great big map out in front of his desk. It was on a big roller. He rolled that map down. And he took the position where the guy was last spotted. And he put an artificial stakeout all the way around that area with state police cars. But finally, they caught the guy, but he got out of the car and he started running across the field and they knocked him down out there. That was in late in the afternoon, and before 6 o'clock the next morning, he'd been tried, convicted, and was in Jackson Prison. Just like that.
Ooh.
They don't operate then the way they operate now.
I see that.
But Scribner was the guy that really caught him.
Because he made that stakeout. He figured
that
out and he sent those cars out there?
He just drew a line right around that area and he sent these cars all down there. And they nailed him.
And that would have been in the early
30s? I got a piece upstairs in the box paper on that somewhere up
there. I'd love to see that sometime.
But
his name was Alex Scribner?
His name was Alexander Scribner.
Alexander Scribner, they called him Al.
He was your grandmother's half-brother.
I remember that long jaw.
Yeah, he had an awful long jaw. But his dad, he lived up on the hill in Ionia. My father died up there on his property. But he had an awful pair of lungs on him. Scribner's dad, did you?
We're going to be talking to Eva Alberts, who also worked at the Rio during the war for a short time. And she came to Lansing from Arkansas in 1939, and she came for work. Where did you stay when you first came? Did you get a job right away?
No. No, I didn't get a job for 2 years, or for a year. I take care of twins for $3 a week, room and board.
That wasn't very much money. That was a lot of work. So where did you finally get a job?
Well, let me see. Then I worked for the Chili Bowl, what was called the Chili Bowl.
Oh, that was a restaurant?
Yeah, for $10 a week.
For $10 a week?
Yeah.
Of course, in 1939, maybe that was good money, I don't know, but it doesn't sound like much. Where did you go from there? Did you go to Rio from there?
Yeah.
What made you go to the Rio?
Because it was hiring.
You heard they were hiring? You saw it in the paper or something?
I don't remember.
What did you do when you... So you went to the Rio in what, 1940?
41.
You went in 41. And what did they have you do? What was your job?
I was stripping pins onto a... What was it?
Stripping pins?
I don't remember what you were doing. You were out in the other apartment.
Yeah, they were stripping pins.
What?
They would... Dip them and then we had to strip the pins.
Oh, firing pins.
Oh, you were firing pins, and you were in the Navy Ordnance Department at this time?
Yeah, actually, they were machines. They were dipped in... Some kind of a solution.
Yeah.
Was that hard work?
They were a long pin with a head on them.
Oh, and they were the firing pins for the...
The hole went down the bottom fuse, and that pin went down in there. And when the fuse was dropped, the fuse on the end of the bomb hit that pin, and that's when it exploded. Well, now, just a minute, Dave.
What, was that hard? Were you working days?
I was on all three shifts.
You were on all three shifts?
Yeah.
Did you find the work hard?
No.
Different from a restaurant?
Yeah.
And did you work with a lot of other women, or were there women and men both in your department?
Just women.
Do you remember who your foreman was or your boss at that time?
No, I don't.
Okay. What kind of money were you making? Do you remember that?
Well, I know who he was, but I don't know what his name was.
I don't know.
He was a young guy.
But you must have been making more than $10 a week.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Did you have to wear any kind of special clothing? Something on your hair?
No.
You weren't near any kind of machinery that...
No, I was sitting down.
You're sitting down?
Yeah.
How long did you work at the Rio?
Jeez, how long did I work there?
Well, when it shut down.
You were there all during the war, were you?
I was there during the war because I went out there and worked on the line.
I went back there and worked.
And then I worked, after I lived on Saginaw, I went back to work there. In the shipping department.
But during the war, you stayed right in that one department stripping those firing pins?
No, I went and worked on the drill press for a while. Remember?
I think so.
I'd get my finger caught.
Did you... You were injured working on the drill press?
Yeah, I kept the end of my finger.
I know a girl that worked on a drill press there. She didn't work in my department. She was in the next room over where she worked. And she had long hair. That was all the rage back then. Hair went down her shoulders. She was supposed to wear a hat.
Supposed to wear a hairnet. A
hairnet, but she didn't do it. She got that hair caught in the drill. And it scalped her. Before she started screaming, before they could get that thing, machine shut off, it had just about scalped her.
My gosh.
And the orders went out from there on out. Nobody wore wedding rings, jewelry of any kind, and if you either had a net on or you didn't work.
That's if you were working on a piece of machinery?
No, I had one old girl working for me. She was a Jew, and she had a great big wedding ring. And one day I had to go out and tell her to have to take that ring off. No, I ain't taking that ring off. I forget how old she said she was, but she said that ring's been on that finger since I got married. Well, I said, you can't work here if you don't take that ring off. That's the order. I can't tell you anything different. You either take the ring off or I have to put Chicky off the job. So she finally agreed to take the ring off, and she put it on a string, hung it around her neck. And that wasn't going to work very good, because when she bent over, that ring could have hit that drill.
Oh, yeah.
And I don't remember how they did work that out with her, but she stayed there.
Maybe just by wearing it inside.
She had a battle with them. She wasn't going to take that ring off.
Even though it meant her safety.
Yeah, they explained to her what had happened to some of those girls that gotten their ring fingers caught in the drill. You stripped the meat right off their fingers.
Is that how you caught your finger? Did you have a ring in your finger?
No, I cut the end of my finger.
And what did it do to it? Just cut it off, or?
Yeah.
What did they rush you up to the first aid,
no,
I expect?
No, it wasn't that bad.
Oh. Goodness sake.
Well, I had a girl that lost a finger out there in the machine. We had what they called an air chuck. You pulled the handle over and the jaws would open up. You stick your material, your workpiece in there. Then you push the handle back and she'd come down on that piece of material. Then you went ahead and machined it. But if you didn't watch your fingers when you put that in there and you hit that darn lever, she'd she shut down on your fingers, and one of the girls did forgot what she was doing. She lost that much, about that much of a finger.
When I worked in Elsie in the factory, one of the girls lost her fingers. We had to put our hands into the punch press. It used to scare me. I just thought of something I wanted to ask you. Heck, I can't think of it now. So you worked there all during the war, and then when the war was over, did they lay you off?
Yeah.
Did they lay off a lot of the women? Everybody? Was the plant shut down for a time?
They shut down and redo it.
Oh, so they could go back into peacetime?
But everything in the Navy Department was canceled out. I worked there, I think, 2 weeks after the war ended, finish up all material we had. And then I got called back to Fisher Body.
How long were you off from work when you got laid off when the war was over?
I didn't get called back till
it was after we moved over on Saginaw.
Yeah.
So it was several years.
Because I went and done waitress work and everything on account of it.
So you didn't go back till probably 50 or 51 or 2.
51, yeah.
What did you do then?
I was in the shipping department.
And you were boxing things up for export?
Then I had to quit because I didn't have anybody to leave gym with.
Oh, okay.
I was having to work nights.
Because I don't work as much shifts then, I had to work nights.
Yeah. But you don't recall how much you made during the war?
No.
Did you ever go down to the clubhouse, or was the clubhouse gone by then, emptied out?
I was still there.
Oh.
They hadn't touched anything there. They didn't start tearing that place down for her just recently.
That's right.
When that thing caught fire, that was set.
You think so?
I know it was.
Tell me what you know about that.
Well, the simple reason is that the city of Lansing had taken it over, and they didn't want to spend the money to hire a bunch of demolition teams to come in there and tear it down.
Mm-hmm.
And so, unbeknown to anybody, I guess they set it on fire, and it ruined it. The only thing they had left standing was the powerhouse.
The powerhouse?
That was the one on Grand Trunk Tracks where the big steam plants was.
Oh, really?
And they tore that down. But
it wouldn't burn?
No, it didn't burn.
I would imagine that I remember that fire, but I imagine with all those oil-soaked floors and all that stuff, but the bricks themselves wouldn't burn, would they, for the outside of the buildings?
No, I don't know. I guess they hauled them out of there, but some wrecking company from Chicago bought all the material that was in that plant.
Oh, bought what was left in?
Yeah,
you mean the plant was emptied out before it caught?
Bought all the machinery and things of that day. It was an outfit in Chicago. It was a Jewish outfit. And they bid on it. And they bought all the machinery and all the everything that could be sold. They stripped the plant.
So it was totally empty when it was set on fire?
Yeah, it was empty when it burned.
But
I've always said that place was set on fire intentionally because the city of Lansing had bought it. I forget what they paid for it, but I guess they didn't want to spend the money to hire a wrecking crew to go in there and tear it down. It would have cost a considerable amount of money. And I think I just hired some flunky to get on there and set her on fire.